You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
Welcome on campus to the Purple Project Podcast. On the menu, this podcast is all about the latest developments in Kansas State athletics. From football to basketball and everything else in between the college town of the Little Apple, it's the Purple Project Podcast. And now your host, Eddie Greer III.
K-State Nation, welcome on board, folks, to the Purple Project Podcast, episode 100. This podcast has turned triple digits. We're in Manhattan, Kansas, Eddie Greer here, as usual for the Purple Project Podcast, all about what's going on around Kansas State Athletics, the K-State University campus here in Manhattan, Kansas, here wrapping up over the past couple weeks, graduation here in Manhattan, Kansas. Congratulations to the class of 2022 for getting it done in your studies, including all the seniors who are a part of all the sports here in K-State, whether that was football, baseball, basketball, men's and women's, women's golf as well. Of course, you are new to the podcast, welcome on board. That is your new intro to this podcast, mixed in with some of the old extras I have on here. But that is your new intro, surprise, surprise, to episode 100 of the Purple Project Podcast. Before I bring on my co-host, as usual, the Purple Project Podcast, if you are new, please find it wherever you get your podcast. If you've been following us for a while, we appreciate you. As well, we're on Spotify, iTunes, Odyssey, and a few more podcasting platforms as well. The Purple Project Podcast rolling on into late May here as we're recording on Thursday night, late Thursday night here in Manhattan, Kansas, at least me here, Thursday, May 19th, 2022. I don't know why I got my dates mixed up here, but yeah, it's been that kind of week. Super busy week, at least work-wise, for yours truly. All right, no messing around. We have quite a bit to get to on this special edition of the podcast, Milestone 100. And over the weekend, this podcast actually turned 2 years old and now heading into year three. And a part of that podcast, of course, the show, none other than my co-host who is out there in San Diego, California, doing his thing out there, none other than Alex Aiden. Alex, what's happening?
Not too much, Eddie. Not too much. Happy 100th episode to you, sir. We have hit the benchmark. You mentioned it. The podcast just turned two. It just hit 100 episodes. So, what is it, about 50 episodes a year for weeklies? So, not too shabby. By the way, Ella, my cat, she is celebrating with us as well. I'll just say that. She is very, very animated. Very animated this evening. She is thrilled that we are at 100 episodes. We'll go with that. We'll go with that. She's animated about that. But yeah, just super excited, Eddie. Super excited to hit that milestone and be able to do this iconic episode with you on the 100th episode. And, you know, we got some good stuff to talk about. You know, we've got see the K-State men's basketball schedules beginning to come together a little bit. Football team as football program, as we know, inducted some more players into the Ring of Honor. K-State baseball got throttled against Virginia Tech, which I heard on your weekly. Your daily.
Yep, there you go.
As well. and so, yeah, you know, hey, you know, it is what it is. I expected it. The golf team officially eliminated as well from the tourney. So, lots of stuff going on. And then just on top of that, Eddie, I tell you what, this has been such a wild and whirlwind recruiting season, just all over the place, because this has been the first full cycle of recruiting that we've had with NIL and with the portal and with like all the, it's not the first time with the portal, but it's the first time with the portal with NIL combined. And it has created very interesting recruiting season in basketball and football. For the better, for the worse, depends who you talk to on that. And there's just lots of stuff going on in the recruiting trail, lots of stuff going on in the recruiting ways. You know, K-State continues to try to land some basketball guys, and the football team, they're really kind of in on this Kansas quest right now as they go after Avery Johnson and Dylan Edwards from the two stars of Kansas kids. Got a couple others that they're targeting, and, you know, this summer we could potentially see some commits there. Not necessarily commits to K-State. I hope to K-State, but I don't know. But lots of intriguing stuff going on there. And eager to break it all down with you. And I know for episode 100, you've got something up your sleeve. Because when you were teasing episode 100 a couple episodes ago, you slapped me with something I said in episode 50. So I don't know what you're going to throw at me today, tonight, but we'll see. And we'll roll with it. And I'm ready for it.
I might have something, but I didn't exactly come prepared, but you never know. You never know between now and the end of this episode, Alex. So, yeah, you gotta stay on your toes. Stay on your toes there.
Keep me on my toes, Eddie.
Yeah, you touched on it all. K-State baseball getting ready here as we're recording this on this late Thursday night here, getting ready for their final series on the road against West Virginia. And you mentioned the daily that I posted yesterday, K-State getting throttled by Virginia Tech 8-2. You want more information, go check that daily out for sure. Download it, go check it out as well. And also, Alex also mentioned we've been updating you guys on the golf team, their journey in Norman as they tried to get a berth into the national championship. That obviously did not happen as they could not advance to the national championships. You had to get top five in the regional to advance to the national championships in golf, which I believe they're held in Scottsdale, Arizona, if my memory was correct. I read that somewhere. Just keeping track of where the golf team was trying to get to, and obviously they fell a little bit short thanks to a slow start in day one of that regional there, but they did improve in day two there. Again, both of those updates are up there now on a daily on the Purple Project podcast feed. Once again, got to throw that in there. And so, but K-State golf, men's golf season comes to a close there after a great regular season there, finishing ninth in the conference, rolling. They had a good showing last weekend as well. Just a lot of things, a lot of sports coming to an end here in this 2021-22 campaign here. Meanwhile, yes, recruiting, Alex talked about it already. You know, I'm actually going to start with the basketball side here, as later on we will go down kind of the schedule, what's going on at least here in Manhattan and on the road, obviously, with the baseball team. And there's a couple events coming up for the track and field team, I believe, which includes their... As I'm looking it up here, I have it on a different page. Here, let's see. Yeah, I have it on a different page now. Never mind. So, but yeah, we'll get into that also. The Ring of Honor as well. Six more former K-Staters getting into the Ring of Honor. We'll mention those as we move along. But yes, the burning question, and I'm going to steal it from the PowerCat podcast that I got caught up on this week, and it concerns about the men's basketball team. Obviously, they're in the running for a couple of big-time scores, and if you have not been paying attention, Nigel Pack, who was obviously had a lot of talent, came here from the Midwest, Indiana, stayed for 2 years. Obviously, the big burning question throughout this past year was, with Bruce Weber resigning, would Nigel Pack stay put or would he transfer out? Well, we already know that question. He's already off to Miami and he signed that NIL big time contract. There was life out there. K-State, Alex, is still looking for that score. And obviously, we already know, you know, Jerome Tang, with our special guest last week, Eli Anderson, and go check it out, by the way, episode 99 of the Pro Project Podcast, weekly edition. Very good insight from him and what he brought to the table. Obviously, a friend, a good friend of mine, and a former colleague of the 91.9 or college radio station. Definitely go check it out. And just to, sorry to get off the rails here a little bit, but there's going to be more of that to come this summer as I got a list of guests here that I'm going to be reaching out here this summer as we get to into that point of the year where there's going to be things will quiet down, unless it's recruiting-wise, things like that. So we will definitely have some more of that here on the Pearl Project Podcast this coming summer of 2022. Meanwhile, K-State men's basketball, Jerome Tang, they're still looking for that elite scorer. Obviously, Anton Davis, they missed out on him. And they missed out on another scorer. I can't think of his name right now, but they missed out on another scorer. So we know.
Julian Phillips. They recently lost out on him. He went to LSU.
He went to LSU. Yep. So K-State, you know, Tim Fitzgerald, who is the owner of PowerCat Podcast 24/7 Sports. The leader of that group, one of their subscribers asked that question about where are we going to get that leading score from? I mean, well, obviously they're going to have to get it because find it interesting that, you know, with summer workouts around the corner, that, you know, these basketball teams, whether it's K-State, OU, KU, you know, going down the line here, have to get their roster prepared by a certain amount of time. So it looks like they have to get their roster at least sorted out by the end of June. That is somewhere in there, something like that. And K-State yet to find their score. And right now, their leading scorer right now would be Marquise Noel. And Alex, I'm going to throw this right at you right from the jump here. Marquise Noel, obviously he went through some growing pains, obviously. He was clutch. Some games it was big, obviously Wichita State, Iowa State, and then sometimes he'll be a little bit too loose with the basketball, a little wild, taking some questionable shots or some questionable decision making, things like that. So with all that being said, given to this point as we record this podcast, episode 100, K-State men's basketball still has yet to land an elite scorer to replace Nigel Pack. The big question is, can they do that, or are they going to have to rely on that experience from Marquise Noel? And obviously, you still have, let's not forget, Ishmael Shood as well,
yeah.
But everything right now is looking circling Marquise Noel.
You know, that's true. And I was listening, and I know that people are like, gosh, why do they always listen to that same podcast? I was listening to the 3-Mile podcast on the KC Sports Network with John Kurtz, Derek Young, and Cole Manbeck. And they literally were talking about this exact topic, as well as Fitz. You're right. Fitz, you know, was talking about it too. And, I mean, John Kurtz said, golly, I mean, right now, Marquise Noel, I was going to go out and score 40 a game. I mean, I think the way the roster is currently constructed, because as of now, just kind of as like a refresher for people, last year we saw the lineup of Noel, Pack, Felt Miguel, Ish, and then Davion, right? That was the most common starting lineup that we saw. And this year, what you're looking at is obviously you'd have Marquise as your point guard, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you'd have Ish probably there at 4. We know they got Cameron Carter. He was the transfer from Mississippi State, who was a freshman guard. He was actually a top 150 recruit. Still has 3 years of eligibility. Good player, but still a player that probably needs to be developed just a little bit. By the way, I apologize. My cat is, for some reason, scratching against the wall. I don't know why. And then at small forward, or at the 3, they got the transfer, Naquan Tomlin, who was the number 7 JUCO recruit that we talked about. And I think that he could provide some nice versatility for him. And he can step back, he can shoot the 3, he can go down, he can play. And he can bully someone down low and play the 5. He's kind of versatile. I think someone that's really valuable for him. But I think the three is ideal for him. Then obviously you have Ish at the four, and then they got Jarrell Colbert, who was with LSU. He was also same as Cameron Carter. He was a top 150 recruit. Played a year at LSU, transfers out. Really good player, a lot of high upside. But he's still got a little bit of development to go on. So that would probably be starting lineup right now. And there's not a lot of scoring there. I think that's really the biggest thing. There's a lot of potential with that lineup, Eddie. There's a lot of really, really good potential with that lineup. That's a team, that's a starting lineup that in my opinion, could compete. Could compete. But you've got to get some wings. You've got to get some scorers. And you have got to kind of build some layers of depth. And what K-State was really trying to go with Antoine Davis when they went after him was this is the guy that's going to inject that scoring, right? He's just going to inject them with this big scoring presence that they need, kind of replace the Nigel Pack loss. And, he can do that. And then all they would really have to do after that is really just find a wing to really kind of round things out. So losing Antoine Davis was a big blow. K-State's got to pivot. I know that they're looking at some players. They're looking at a big Alex Chicka. Oh, I cannot say his last name. Chikou. Tichiku? I'm not sure if that's right. But anyway, either way, I don't know. But he follows the mold of the Cam Carter and the Jarrell Colbert. He played in the SEC. He played at Alabama. He played 1 year. And if he would come on, he'd be one of those guys that would be a transfer in and have 3 years eligibility. But he still doesn't address the scoring issue, the scoring need, the wing need. And what does K-State do there? And, I mean, you know, there's some guys that have been linked to K-State, but you haven't seen anything lately, at least I haven't seen anything lately that is like, okay, this is the guy who's going to come in this year. Yeah, I've seen a lot of good guys in 2023, Eddie. K-State's linked to a lot of really good players in a 2023 class, and that's awesome. That's great, and you want to be building, obviously, beyond this upcoming season. But when you're looking at the 2022 class, you begin to get a little worried. You begin to get a little worried when you look at the roster just because you're thinking, man, you still got half this roster to fill, and we're coming up Memorial Day. And, what are we going to do? I mean, are we really going to rely on Marquise Noel so that they go score 40 a game? I mean, look, I think Marquise Noel will be better this year than he was last year, but the undersized point guard, that's a lot to ask for him to be really the predominant scoring option. There's a lot defenses could do if he was the guy to key in on him, especially with his lack of size. So, I just think that K-State has got to find some way to inject someone who can have an immediate impact. It's good that they're hitting the 2023 ground running. It's good that they are finding these transfers that still have 3 years of eligibility, and they're getting them players who were, top 150, top 100 recruits. That's all awesome. That's all great. They should be doing those things. But the one thing that they just haven't really done in this class is find that immediate impact transfer. Not saying that Cameron Carter and Jarrell Colbert cannot be that, because they can. Cameron Carter, I think, could potentially play in the NBA. I think he's potentially got that type of talent. So could he blossom? Could he hit this year and just blow up? Sure. I mean, that could happen. It wouldn't stun me. But you can't bank on it, right? You can't be like, well, he's going to do it. We're putting all our eggs in that basket. That's just not smart. If he ends up blowing up this year, great. That's awesome. But you just cannot bank on that. So they've got to find a way to inject some scoring and get some wings and get some length. They kind of need a little more length, Eddie, too. They're just kind of lacking that. You got a guard so undersized. Again, that's no shot at Marquise Noel. K-State's kind of lacking some size in the perimeter. You need to get to get some lanky guys, and you need some wings. So, you know, Eddie, that's kind of what they need. That's kind of what they're looking at. Like I said, love the JUCO land of Naquan Tomlin. I think that's going to be a really good get for him. I think he could be an immediate impact player for him.
Yeah.
And I really do. I really like Colbert and Carter. I think that they got really high ceilings, but they got work to do still. There's still definitely work to be done by this coaching staff. And you mentioned it. You know, you didn't. They had all the momentum, and then you missed on Antoine Davis. You missed on Julian Phillips. You're not able to land. You're not able to land the recruit with the land a visit with the five-star recruit Sean Phillips. And ends up going to Auburn. So I mean, you missed on your last kind of three swings for guys that can kind of be like
you struck out. They struck
you. Yeah, you know, so you kind of lost a little of that momentum, right? And you got to find a way to kind of get back up and get it. I have faith in this coaching staff, Eddie. I really do. And I think that there's going to be players that shake free that K-State's going to have the opportunity to pursue. I also think, I just have a hunch, Eddie, K-State might be silently pursuing a couple players that we don't know about, and right. It may just kind of pop up really late, and all of a sudden, boom, like he commits before we even think about it, because that's what happened to Daquan Tomlin. Texas Tech was recruiting him hard. K-State didn't want anyone to know that they were recruiting him. They sit under the radar. No one knew. He comes in to K-State, shortly cancels his trip to Lubbock, commits to K-State before anyone even knew what happened. I think that there could be, it wouldn't surprise me if K-State was doing that with maybe one or two transfers. So we'll see. So, but I think something's going to shake free. I think they're going to land some players that can kind of fill some needs for next year. But I will say this, Eddie, just to kind of wrap this up, I would rather the coaching staff do what they are doing than do what is the tempting thing to do. I think that's the best way to put it, and a lot of coaches do it. Just go out and get grad transfers. Just go out and get all the grad transfers, right? Just go out and get all the seniors. Go out and get all the experienced guys, the big glitz and, you know, glitz and glamour and all the big numbers and all this, and just a bunch of players have 1 year of eligibility. And you do it because you want to build the best team for this year. But then once that's done, you got to do it all over again. And then you got to do it all over again. And you got to do it all over again. And as great as Iowa State was last year making the Sweet 16, they lost their entire team. They got to rebuild their entire team all over again. And we're seeing that with multiple schools. I think you can make an argument that it worked for Iowa State because they made the Sweet 16. But I'm just saying, I would prefer a coach that's out there saying, you know what, we're not just looking at this year, we're looking at 2023, you know, we're looking at 2024. We want players, we want to land high school guys, we want to redshirt some dudes, we want guys with 3 years of eligibility, and we also want to sprinkle them in with some one-year guys. You know, I think that's the better approach. I think that long-term view is something... It is something to benefit, being able to kind of mix and match and get a little different flavor in the players that you're bringing in. So I know a lot of coaches go in and they go for just all the one-year guys, and we see it all over. But I'm glad Jerome Tang's not doing that. I'm glad that he is being really selective. I think it's the best word you can use, very selective with how he's recruiting, who he's recruiting, whether they fit, getting a blend of different guys. And I think in the long term, it is going to benefit K-State. But there's no doubt, Eddie, that there's questions. There's questions about this 2022 season, and the longer we go, the more antsy we're going to get.
Yeah. So hopefully, as we approach the summer months here, as we're in the back end of May, some of those questions can start to get answered here. But yeah, that's for sure. So. I am a wait and see with some of those guys that we got from the transfer portal, like a Cam Carter, and a couple of those guys. So we'll see what happens. I mean, yeah, they got a little time, but that time is gonna be come before you know it. It's gonna be summer workouts for Jerome Tang, and I'm definitely gonna be interested in see who else this coaching staff can get. To Manhattan, that is for sure.
Eddie, let's just remind people quickly before we do it. Right now, there's only two people in the gym. I mean, they're bringing the recruits in, but at the moment, There is currently only Ish Masood and Marquise Noel in that gym practicing with those coaches right now.
Of course.
I mean, he is literally a team of two at the moment because they are outnumbered by the coaches. In fact, they were interviewed the other day, and they were asked, is it weird? Like, you're going to practice, and it's just you two. Like, is that weird? And they claim it's not, but I feel like it would be pretty weird to be outnumbered by the coaches and just have two guys in there practicing. But just to let people remind people, you know, they're bringing them in. But right now, it is just Marquise and Ish. And you mentioned it, once summer workouts roll out, then you're going to get all these guys that we're talking about beginning to come in. I think anything is an upgrade over two. So I think that's good that they'll at least have some more bodies in there. But you're right. It would be nice if you could have at least 10 bodies, right? So you could at least do 5-on-5. I think that would be ideal at the least, even if that's some walk-ons, right? Even if you can add some walk-ons to the team or some guys like that. But it'll be interesting to see what happens.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast Weekly with Eddie Greer and Alex Aiden.
Yeah, that would be great. yeah, this is have more than two players out there. Definitely two players ain't gonna win you no basketball games. That is for sure. The Purple Project Podcast episode 100. Eddie Greer, Alex Aiden, the Purple Project Podcast Weekly Edition. And to stay on basketball here real quick, there have been two announcements as far as we know, at least two matchups, both on men and women. First one, we kind of talked about this a little bit. Well, Alex, you brought it up a little bit off air before I hit the record button on this. K-State will travel to the historic Hinkle Fieldhouse going to Indianapolis on November 30th. That is a Wednesday, folks. They will take on the Butler Bulldogs, which will be I was not aware of this, but apparently it's the fourth edition of the Big 12 Big East battle that's going to be going on that week, apparently. So I guess that's been going on sneakily. I have not been paying attention to that. So, but anyways, the fourth edition of the Big 12 Big East battle coming up this fall. And K-State notes its opponent taking on Butler. And we know what they do there.
They were supposed to play Butler, Eddie, in the COVID season. Remember, that game got canceled. They were supposed to go there
It
never happened. So now they'll actually get their chance to finally do it.
That's right. The good old COVID year. Yep, that's right.
Oh, yes.
They were supposed to play that game. And, of course, COVID had to change the game plans on that. So, 10 matchups in the Big 12 Big East battle will start on Tuesday, November 29th. And it will run through Sunday, December 4th. And, of course, Butler. Butler is the home team, of course. And this broadcast will be... it's going to be on one of the Fox Sports platforms, quote-unquote. Not exactly... either on Fox or Fox Sports 1 or Fox Sports 2, but it will be on a Fox channel if you have cable or you stream it, whatever. So this is going to be the second meeting, and we know what happened the first meeting going way back. K-State fans, we don't want to rehearse that too much there, that thriller there. But Butler knocked us off in the NCAA West Regional Final in Salt Lake City back in 2010. How many? That's 12 years ago.
That's crazy. That's 12 years ago.
It seems like it happened last night.
Yeah, it does.
So, yeah, all the way back. You got K-State Nation. Well, of course, we don't want to go back, but still, we got to go back to 2010 when that went down. K-State was knocking on the door trying to get themselves into the Final Four, and Butler run all that right there in K-State. Not to add on a cherry on top here, K-State is 0-2 against the Big East there. And, of course, well, last year, you don't got to go too far. Marquette there with that was a costly loss there at home in Bramlage there last year. And then, of course, I can't remember who was the – other team there. I gotta do some research on that, unless Alex can get on that,
you know, Eddie,
ASAP.
I'm thinking, has K-State, I don't think he's ever won a Big 12 Big East matchup. in the 3 years. I don't think they've won one.
That's what I'm thinking. That's what I'm going.
I think they're 0-3 in their 3 years, which makes sense. They were pretty darn bad the last 3 years. Shouldn't shock anyone. But they played Marquette this last year. The year before that, it was canceled, right, because of COVID.
Yeah.
The year before that, they played. Oh, it was because it was in New. Wasn't it? Was up in New Jersey, didn't they play in Brooklyn? Oh my gosh, who did they play?
Oh, Syracuse. God. I think they played Syracuse. Wait, yeah, I think they played Syracuse. I might be right.
Oh my gosh, I need to get a list of the Big East stuff, and I'll be able to answer it when I see a list of Big East basketball teams.
This is
ridiculous.
Yeah, you go ahead and do that while I go over Butler here real quick. Butler, they're going to be bringing in a new head coach, and this name should be familiar here. He used to coach for Ohio State. That's Thad Matta. Going back to his alma mater as the head coach of this Butler team, Matta has won 74% of his games. Has a record of 439, to 154 during his 17-year head coaching career. Obviously, he goes back to Xavier. That was his last. Ohio State was his last stop. And then Xavier for a few years. And then Butler. He used to be with Butler back in the 2000 and 2001 campaign as well. Thad Matta has a resume of advancing to the NCAA tournament 13 times with 2 appearances in the Final Four. Going to go back to again 2007 and 2012 while at Ohio State and the Bulldogs. More bad news for K-State. Just layering on top. The Bulldogs are expected to return their leading scorer, Chuck Harris, who averaged 11 a game, and contributors like Jaden Taylor averaged 8 points a game with almost 3 rebounds. Simus Lucius, I'm not butcher last name. I apologize for that in advance. Sorry. 6 points per game. And then this team last year looked like their overall record was 14-19. Damn.
Yeah, they had their best year.
Yeah, that's not Butler basketball right there. You're 14. You usually find them up in the mix of trying to get themselves in the NCAA tournament there. So that kind of caught me off guard a little bit there. And we all know at K-State there as well, Jerome Tang, first head coach. We already know his first opponent, besides the conference matchups, obviously, his first team outside the Big 12, which is going to be this Butler team in late November. We already talked about Marquise Noel, your leading scorer pretty much right now, averaged 12 a game last year. You had Ishma Shud averaging almost 7 a game and 3 rebounds a game. And we already went over tonight. Cam Carter, Mississippi State, Jarrell Colbert, Naquan Tomlin. And also you have incoming freshman Taj Manning and Dorian Finister as well. So that's what we got right now. Obviously, that's more than 2 players, Alex, there. So,
yeah.
So, what'd you find on the Big East teams, Dave, if you found it yet?
Yeah, Eddie, am I tripping? They played a game in Brooklyn, but I can't think of who it was, but it was not part of the Big East Big 12 Challenge. They've actually only played it twice, Eddie, because it's been 3 years. The game got canceled in 2020 with Butler due to COVID. So K-State's played Marquette a lot the last few years.
Yeah.
I was getting mixed up. What was the Big East Challenge? What wasn't? In 2019, they did play Marquette in the Big East Big 12 Challenge in Manhattan again. And Marquette won that game 73-65. And then they played Marquette the second time in Bramlage again this last year. And Marquette won 64-63. So those are the only 2 games K-State's actually played in the Big East Challenge. And then they've also played Marquette on top of that a couple other times that were not part of the Big 12 Big East Challenge. So that's why it feels like we have not played in the Big 12 Big East Challenge, Eddie. Because we played the same team both times, both in Manhattan, and we've played that team not as part of the Big East Big 12 Challenge. So that's exactly why it doesn't feel like that. But I'm confused because I know K-State went up to Brooklyn, and they played someone. But I cannot think of who it was, and I know it was from the Big East, and I'm looking it over, and I'm wondering if it might have been Georgetown, but it doesn't sound right. So I'm not sure.
That doesn't sound right.
They are 0-2. In the Big 12 Big East Challenge, and they've only played one team.
Yeah, that doesn't sound right. Yeah, we're gonna have to. That might be our homework when when we wrap this thing up.
Who did they play in Brooklyn?
Yeah,
they played someone.
Where we just can't figure out who that is. But however, we do know what K-State's playing in this year's Big 12 Big East battle, and that's Butler coming on November 30th. We double check that.
You know who I think it was, Eddie? I think it was Maryland. Sorry, they're not a Big East school, but I think it was Maryland. I do. I think it was Maryland. I really do. I think that's who it was.
Oh, yeah, we're going to have to
Sorry, everybody. I'm thinking and talking all at once. So, Eddie, proceed with the podcast. All
right, so, and staying on the men's basketball real quick before we transition into the women's schedule here. K-State, as of this afternoon, was in contention in the top 8 for a recruit. Looks like a transfer, actually, in David Ngason, who I don't know where he's coming from, but the big thing is here, K-State's in that hunt to get him. Obviously, and part of that, Maryland, speaking of Maryland, Virginia Tech, let's see, UMass, good old Frank Martin there, George Washington, looks like, GW, St. John, Georgetown, and speaking of Georgetown, Georgetown's in this conversation with Ngason as well. So, K-State in the thick of this recruit, as far as this afternoon goes as well. So, a lot of puzzles to the pieces we're trying to find. K-State in Brooklyn. Hopefully, we'll get that all figured out.
They played Maryland, and Maryland won by 1 point. 69-68.
That sounds about right, actually, now that I think about it.
I knew that rang a bell to me. Yep.
Wow, we figured it out, finally. Good job.
It was not the Big 12 Big East Challenge.
No, it was not. Definitely was not. Because Maryland was in the ACC, I believe, when we played them.
Were they, or did they move to the Big 10 by then?
They were still in the ACC.
Were they still in the ACC? You may be right. You were always right.
Yeah. But women's basketball, so staying on the schedule here, also was announced earlier this morning. K-State women's basketball team will be hosting a Big 10 team on November 17th. That in the team of Iowa. Yes, the Iowa Hawkeyes, one of the premier women's basketball teams in the country, comes to Bramlage in the same month as K-State men's. We'll be going to Butler later that month in the middle of November. K-State women's basketball, led by Ayoka Lee, Serena Sundell and company, they're going to be taking on this Iowa Hawkeye team coming off an NCAA appearance. They finished 24-8 this past year with a 14-4 conference record, and they got upset in the NCAA tournament to Creighton in the second round. And yep, they got upset by 10th-ranked Creighton. 10th seed, actually, 64-62 after blowing out Illinois State in the first round, 98-67. This Iowa team had a premier, quote-unquote, don't have her name up here right now, but I'm going to call her the, quote-unquote, Steph Curry of that Iowa team, knocking down threes. I've seen highlights of her. I can't think of her name right now. I'm pretty sure I'll pull it up while Alex is talking, but this is a huge for K-State. Obviously, this past year for K-State, we knocked off Oregon, who was ranked, what, 12th or something like this past year. At that time, anyways, let's see, we beat Baylor, who was ranked top 10 somewhere at that time. We've beaten a couple good teams at Bramlage this year, and all the synopsis that this K-State was basketball team is going to be loaded. I've talked about it at Premium on this Pro Project podcast, November 17th, Thursday night basketball in Bramlage Coliseum. K-State welcomes Iowa. What do you think about that?
I think it's a great matchup. I think it's a tremendous matchup. And Eddie, I think K-State, we've talked about this women's team. They've really got a team that can compete and do some special things next year. Look, next year is kind of, I'm not going to call it like the all-in year, because it's not the all-in year, but I mean, this is it. This is it with the Oakley League, right? I mean, it's senior year, going out, swinging. I mean, this is it. So, you know what? Schedule Iowa, bring them to Bramlage, play the premier teams, premier talent, put Aoka Lee on display, put this program on display, and see what he can do. And see where the sky, you know, let the chips fall where they may. And look, Jeff Mitty does that anyway. We've seen the way K-State has played UConn in Bramlage. They've played Oregon in Bramlage. They've gone to South Carolina and played the Gamecocks. They have played the best talent in college basketball year in, year out. That is something that Jeff Mitty does. I like that he does it. I really admire it. So continue doing it. And bringing a team like Iowa to Bramlage, number one, it gives the fans the opportunity to come out and see a premier program, which is always great. It's great for the university. It's great for exposure. It's great for attendance. It's great for it all.
And let me cut in here. Sorry. Let me cut here real quick. Yes, yeah, so we're going to have some good individual matchups. I did figure out who that sharpshooter was Iowa. She's going to be a senior this upcoming year. That's Caitlin Clark, who she was hitting ridiculous shots from downtown. A very good three-point shooter. And, of course, you got Aoka Lee for KK State on the other side. So, star-studded, baby. Star-studded. Sorry, go ahead.
Exactly. That leads perfectly into my next point. It's good for, it's obviously good for all the things that I just mentioned. For the exposure, for the fans and for all those things. But more than anything, it's good for the basketball program because it's a great measuring stick. It's a great measuring stick early on for that team to see where they're at, right? That's early in the season, mid-November. I mean, you're just getting your season rolling right there, and you're going to know a lot of that. You're going to be able to really gauge yourself against one of the top teams in the country really quickly. And you mentioned it, this team, this Iowa team, they only lost 8 games last year?
They won a lot of games.
If you mentioned it, that Clark was, she was a really, really good, player for them. Averaged 27 points a game, averaged 8 rebounds a game, 8 assists a game. Oh my gosh. So, that is crazy. So, you mentioned it, Aoka Lee, Caitlin Clark, they don't play the same position, but you're talking about two of the best players in women's college basketball going head-to-head mid-November. You can't ask for more. You really can't ask for more. And so it's going to be an exciting game. Get your tickets. Get your popcorn. Get it all. Well, you can't get either one right now. But when you get your tickets and your popcorn, get your tickets, get your popcorn, and get a Bramlage, because that's going to be a good one. That's going to be a good one that that you're going to want to see, and it's going to be a good one for the women's basketball team because they'll be able to figure out where they're at. And once they get blown out of the gym, Eddie, they get blown out of the gym, they've at least measured themselves. They know where they're at. They know where they need to go. Either way, they'll learn a lot about themselves, and I think it'll help propel them. And I'm eager to see what other games they have on schedule, Eddie. I'm eager to see
this
full women's schedule when it's all said and done.
Yes, and we'll definitely have all that breakdown of the men's and women's basketball schedules once they do get released here. You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast Weekly Edition, episode 100. As we're recording this on May 19th, 2022, Eddie Greer here in Manhattan, Kansas, Alex Aiden out there in San Diego, California, two K-State alums with this podcast. So, yeah, that's going to be a good game for sure. And you can, at least you can get your popcorn at Dylan's. So, or another store, whether it's at least here at Dylan's, or you can go to Walmart or whatever you get your groceries, Aldi's. Yeah, we can stock up on that good stuff still, though. So,
Bonds for all the California people listening, which is probably none. But for all the California people, it's Bonds.
Oh, goody, goody, good, good time. So that's two big announcements there pertaining to the men's basketball schedule and women's basketball schedule, with K-State going on the road to Indianapolis to take on Butler in the Big 12 Big East battle. And then, of course, a couple weeks earlier in that same month, you got Iowa coming to Manhattan, which, who knows, at that point, Iowa could be ranked somewhere. So that's gonna be something for sure. So that could be one of the better games on that schedule. Of course, you got your conference games. We all know that. So yeah, I'm anxious to see what the rest of the schedule unfolds for both sides. We'll definitely have the breakdown on that. Speaking of schedules, that's a good transition to check out what's happening this weekend around K-State Athletics. Of course, the final series in the regular season for baseball. Baseball coming off of a 6-run defeat on the road in Blacksburg. They got to turn around and go back up northeast to take on the West Virginia Mountaineers for a 3-game set beginning tomorrow late afternoon. First pitch, 5:30 Central Time. West Virginia 3-game set there. And of course, that'll all kind of wrap itself up there with the 2022 Big Phillips 66 Big 12 Baseball Tournament, which will start on that following Wednesday. So that's May 25th there as well. And on the same day, the track and field team will begin their quest here in the NCAA's West Preliminaries there as well. That is next Wednesday and Thursday for the track team as well. And then going, rewinding back a little bit to this Saturday, of course, before game two with West Virginia on the road here in Manhattan taking place, which is a big deal. Manhattan Running Company has been doing this for quite a while now. It will be the Bill Snyder 2022 Bill Snyder 5K Half Marathon going down on Saturday morning, beginning with the half marathon, which I'll be out there doing that at right before you get on / off I-70, that bridge there at 7 o'clock, bright and early. Hey, heck yes, I'm ready for that. And then, of course, you guys are doing the 5K. That's going to start on the field at Bill Snyder Family Stadium and will end at Bill Snyder Family Stadium. And, of course, the half marathon will end at Bill Snyder Family Stadium as well. So definitely, you're listening to this podcast, you're around, or you're participating, you still have, there's still time. You got one more day left to get signed up if still interested on that. For more information, definitely go check out ManhattanRunningCompany.com or check out the Facebook page as well. Shameless plug on the Pro Project Podcast. Got to throw it in there while I can there. So that's huge. So definitely looking forward to Saturday morning. This would be my fifth, I believe. Yeah, my fifth or sixth one. I believe it's my fifth half marathon that I'm attempting. So I'm looking forward to it. I'm excited. I'm excited for it for sure. It's supposed to be really cool on Saturday morning with a little bit of a, you don't know what you're going to get with this Kansas weather, I tell you. But at the time right now, it looks like Saturday morning, it's going to be a little bit cooler than it has been. It's supposed to be around the low 50s, somewhere like that. So definitely, that is favorable weather. If you love to run in this type of weather, definitely, you got to like your chances. So.
Eddie, what's your running weather preference?
I would probably say springish slash a little bit of summer and a little bit of fall. So I prefer, I like kind of running in the heat, believe it or not. Obviously, for me, being born and raised in the South, I'm used to that heat and playing in that football weather, especially when you get ready for that summer workouts. Boy,
you gotta get you.
Yeah,
like
so
in a toaster.
So I'm more leaning, if I had a scale, get a number one choice, I would say summer, then fall, and then spring. Because spring, you don't know what you're gonna get. It felt like the spring, it was like feel like more winter, more like spring here at least. But yeah,
you're rather the hot and the cold.
Yeah, but still though, being around the 50s on Saturday morning, that is not too bad. I mean, here around here, at least in Manhattan, I don't know how it is in San Diego, at least in the mornings, it's been a low 60s all week to this point. So it'll be a little bit cooler, but I'm really looking forward to it. That should be really, really good. But yeah, I prefer running that heat. besides, I'll take heat over the negative 20 degree weather.
That's fair. And you were correct, Eddie. Out here, it's the same. Low to mid 60s. It depends when you run. It depends when. If you're talking like mornings at 7 a.m., yeah, like low to mid 60s. If you're talking like later in the morning, 70 maybe ish. It's San Diego. I mean, it's kind of the same every day. But 60s is pretty safe bet. So interesting. That makes sense, though. That makes sense. You know, from the South, you would want to run more than heat. But it's interesting because it feels like a lot of people like kind of the cooler, crisper air to run into. It's just interesting. I was curious your preference, and so that makes sense, though. That makes sense because you're right. Oh boy, summer workouts in the South, can't even imagine.
Yep. So definitely looking forward to that. That's kind of what's been going on. That's kind of the wrap up here. As far as the schedule goes, as the men's golf team, as we talked about a little bit earlier on in this podcast, wrapped up their season yesterday with a nice with a ninth place finish in the Big 12, not the Big 12, the NCAA regionals, Big 12 regionals. It all feels like the same thing, especially with the newcomers of the Big 12 coming within the next year or so. With that, so that's kind of a look around K-State Athletics, including a little bit of Manhattan news here on the Pro Project Podcast. Eddie Greer, Alex Aiden. K-State, switching gears to football, announced their Ring of Honor class for 2022 yesterday, and features a lot of the players that I know, and maybe one that I don't know very much. Obviously, let's run them down here real quick. Arthur Brown, big time linebacker, who was here from 2011 to 12. Running back Larry Brown, that's the name that I'm not familiar with. He was at K-State from 1967 to the 68 season. Then you have defensive end Darren Howard, 1996 through 1999. That's almost 4 years there. Right there for Darren Howard. There, obviously, the new OC of Kansas State football and former quarterback, K-State quarterback, Colin Klein, 2009 through 2012. Tyler Lockett, wide receiver, 2011, 2014. And, of course, Eli Roberson, one of the great quarterbacks here at K-State, from 2000 to 2003. I didn't start watching K-State football. I can't remember the year, but I started watching that obviously when K-State was really reverent, was really in the know, when Michael Beasley, no, Jonathan Beasley, I think. Jonathan Beasley. Yep, when Jonathan Beasley and Eli Roberson were quarterbacks. I did watch a little bit of Michael Bishop back in the day, but I didn't really get acquainted with K-State until I saw Jonathan Beasley and Eli Roberson play. So that's when I started kind of following K-State, but not as much as I do now, obviously. So that's a big time class for this football team. Big time names, obviously. A lot of them that, and I had a privilege, we had the privilege, obviously, of calling some of these games while Captain 019, particularly Colin Klein. Do you remember calling some of his games there? Tyler Lockett, big plays. Receiver and return game.
I remember Arthur Brown. We saw it.
Arthur Brown, yeah.
He lined up with Colin Klein, at least those last 2 years.
Yep, Arthur Brown, yes. So I can remember going back to my first, I want to say my second year, somewhere in that. Anyways, it was Arthur Brown in that big game. I was a student that game against Baylor when Baylor
was RG3. That's bring the Baylor game up. That's the one I think of, too.
With RG3. I was in the stands for that football game.
Yeah.
That was a ridiculous game. Oh, man.
I think of him on that last drive, and him coming up and him hitting, getting RG3 from behind on a beautiful play. And I remember, for some reason, I remember this dude, Jordan Volker. I don't know if anyone remembers Jordan Volker. That name rings a bell. But he, on fourth down, he was the one that actually deflected the pass following the big Arthur Brown sack. Was it a sack? I can't remember if it was a sack or if RG3 was scrambling and he got it for a loss. Either way, the play after that, him knocking down RG3's pass to win the game. I think of that, and I also think of that Oklahoma game in 2012 in Oklahoma where he and who was it? Oh, my gosh. I'm trying to think of the other – I can't think of the other end off the top of my head that had the big game, but he had a big game in Norman in 2012 too, in the first Big 12 game of that season.
I was there for that one. Now I was in the booth for that one, doing Twitter updates on that game.
Oh, were you? Oh, okay.
Yes, sir. Yep, I remember clear. Yep, I can't remember. Yeah, I can't remember who had a big game because I know Arthur Brown had a huge game and somebody else on that defense.
It was, and I'm trying.
Somebody had an interception. I'm gonna have to.
It was an interception that went back for the touchdown. Remember, it was like intercepted like a five, and then like just it literally was only like a 5 yard straight in. Oh, I can't remember who it was. Either way, Arthur Brown had a big game. He had a big game that night, and it set the tone because that was the first Big 12 game of the season, and it led K-State on that 11-1 year.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast Weekly with Eddie Greer and Alex Aiden.
Yeah, now I'm going to be looking up to try to do two things at the same time. Yeah, because
got that pick six.
Somebody got the pick six.
I remember the pick six.
Because that place, if you've ever been a game in Norman, that place was rocking. Because I can remember a lot of this day, but I do can remember who had a big game on the offensive side. That was John Hubert. He had a huge game. So yeah, he had a big game, and that big we had a big play late somewhere, and that silenced the crowd. I can't remember now. I'm gonna have to do some double duty here while we talk. But yeah, big class there. Obviously highlighted by Colin Klein, Arthur Brown, Tyler Lockett, and those guys. It's big. That's big class going in there. And I did not realize that I thought there was a Lockett already on the Ring of Honor. But turns out, somebody told me this, I thought Aaron Lockett was on the Ring of Honor. Turns out he was not. Now, you can confirm me on this, Alex, though, but he or Kevin Lockett are on there either. Now,
that's crazy.
I've been to a lot of home games now. I know a few of those names are on that list on the Ring of Honor, but I thought that was a Lockett already on the Ring of Honor. But it turns out no Lockett until Tyler Lockett, obviously, never been on the Ring of Honor. That's just astounding to me there.
That's crazy. When all the Lockets have done, that is kind of crazy that they're not on there. But yeah, I think they're right. I don't think that they are.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking off the top of my head, I don't recall ever seeing one on the Ring of Honor.
Yeah, I don't think so either. come to, you know, think about it, you know, so yeah, that's pretty crazy. And I'm looking at, as we're talking now,
I think I got that. I think was it Jarrell Childs? Was he the one that got to pick six?
Yep, Jarrell Childs. Yep. We're on the same page now. Yep, Jarrell Childs.
Yeah. He got to pick six. I remember Meshack Williams. That was the other one. I remember having a big game at defensive end. He was coming off the edge too. In fact, he might have actually kind of caused that pick six, if I recall, because he was getting in the back of it a lot too. But Jarrell Childs is the one that actually got the pick six or the fumble. It might have been a fumble and a scoop in. Actually, that might have been what it was.
That was a fumble. Yep, confirmed.
That's what it was. Meshack sacked, got the sack, and then Jarrell Childs scooped it up and ran it in. I think that may be what happened.
Yep, scooped it in. Yep, we're on the same page here now that I have the old score from good old. Thank you, ESPN. I appreciate you. ESPN Plus, thank you. Again, another plug here on the Pro Project Podcast. Yeah, top 20 matchup. Going back to 2012, we're going to go reminisce a little bit while this is the 100th episode of the Pro Project Podcast weekly edition. Oklahoma was ranked 6th at the time. K-State was 15th at the time, and they pulled this win off. 24-19 was the score, and K-State was undefeated at this point this season. 4-0. That was the first conference game in prime time.
That was the first conference game of the whole conference season.
Yep.
Like, that was setting the tone right there.
Yep, and Colin Klein, our transition to the Ring of Honor, Colin Klein, 228 total yards of offense, including the go-ahead touchdown early in that fourth quarter there. And then, of course, the defense were all over. I thought Landry Jones was overrated. So there's that. And John Hubert had a big game on the ground, like I mentioned. Had a touchdown and 130 yards on the ground and a touchdown there in that game right there. So, yeah.
Eddie was there. Eddie was in West Virginia. Eddie was down in Norman.
That was big, yeah. Yeah, that was big. Big year, man. Yeah, man. I was doing Twitter. I was not on the air that night, but I can just remember it was just a raucous crowd. I do remember that in the silence.
It was prime time. I remember that. It was Saturday football Fox. It was the game of the night.
Yep, the silence was awesome in that place there. Justin Tuggle forced one of the fumbles, and Childs picked it up and scored.
Oh. Okay, there we go. Yep. Yeah.
And score. I'm just rereading the article here that I have in front of me here. So it just all of us now.
How many defensive players had big games that night?
Yep. It just brings back memories now, just reading it back over. So glorious. So glorious evening.
That was a great game. That was one of my favorite K-State games of probably all time. That set the tone for that 11-1 season.
Yes,
it really did.
Yes, it did. Getting a win like that is huge. On the road there, so definitely call him.
I miss it, man. I want to be in the top 15 again and playing games like that again.
No doubt. Yeah.
Come on, we want this year.
Yes, Chris Kleiman, you know what we got? What you got to do? We have to get to that point where that was a top 20 matchup, as I said, and just the importance of that game and going down to Norman, all excited. I think Mike Pereira. Who else was there? I want to say Dan Page. I'm not quite sure. But I know it was me and Mike for sure. And two other guys. That's the thing that we missed too. Good point, Alex. Is the top being part of these top 20, top 15 matchups in college football, right? You get the national attention. Or you could get in the prime time slot as well. You know, this funny thing as well. Speed up prime time slots. Okay, so again, going back to one of my favorite K-State podcasts, besides our own, is the Power Gap Podcast, Tim Fitzgerald. I think they discussed their recent episode that came out early this week. A subscriber brought up the time of the games, right? And the fact, or they were discussing the nobody doesn't like to play the early game or whatever. Mm-hmm. Yep. And if you sync up like how the NFL does, right? You have these 1 o'clock games, right? Eastern time, right? And you have your late games, right? If the college game decides to switch it up, then you're even with the NFL. Then nobody complains about it, right? You have no choice but to play the 1 o'clock games, right? So I thought that was interesting there. And, you know, obviously you have your early morning games and nobody's what. First off, back in the quote-unquote old head days, some of those games were the big-time games. It wasn't always the prime-time games now. Some of those 11 o'clock games were big-time matchups.
And that's what Fox is doing. Fox has that big noon kickoff, right? Or that Gus and Joel do that big noon kickoff game. And, uh-huh, and that means 11 a.m. Central time as well.
Yep. Yeah, so...
Which, by the way, people, that is 9 a.m. my time. So when K-State gets an 11 a.m. kick and you're like, oh my God, I got to wake up at 11 a.m. I got to wake up at 9 a.m. for a football game, okay? So, hey, like, you're not... okay.
That's
like,
not so
you're
bad.
Okay. Like, I'm literally, it's like I'm waking up for work to go to watch this Wildcats play football. So, just going to put, so feel bad. Clearly, Eddie, I want everybody to feel bad for me because that's why I just said that. that's why I was so bummed when they played Stanford at 11 a.m. I was like, are you kidding me? 11 a.m.?
I was not happy about that either.
It's 9 a.m. for me. Like, I'm all pumped for the Stanford game. I'm going to be half asleep with a cup of coffee. You know, trying to get all fired up for Stanford, but I did. I was definitely fired up for that game. But you're right. I mean, those are more the prime time, or more of those prime time slots, where those 11 a.m. kickoffs. And you know, I think there's really no point in arguing over when you play. Just play. Like, you know what I mean? Look, I'll say this, Eddie. What was great about 2011 and 2012, those two football seasons, was K-State was constantly playing in prime time, right? They were constantly playing in prime time. They were constantly the game of the week or one of the games of the week, and they were constantly in top 20 matchups. That was great. But you got to play when you can play. You know what I mean? And I get it. People want, you know, they want that all the time, but you also got to earn it, right? And you got to earn the opportunity to be able to have those matchups. And just to be 100% honest, I know this is kind of veering off the ride a little bit, so I'll veer right on the road, right back on the road quickly, but you got to earn that, and K-State hasn't really earned it the last couple years. There's nothing wrong going 7-5 or 8-5. There's nothing wrong with 8-5. Not complaining about that. Chris Bynum's done a good job. But these teams are not the teams that we saw in 2011 and 2012. That went 10-2 and 11-1. In the regular season, teams that were ranked in the top 10, you know, teams that were consistently in top 15 and top 20 matchups. Because, Eddie, when we were in school, that was like the norm.
That was the norm.
But that's not the norm, right?
Nope. Not right now.
That hasn't been the norm since we left, honestly. or since I left. And the last time it was the norm was the season I graduated, which was Sutter Lockett's senior year in 2014. That was the last year that it was really the norm, where K-State was ranked all year long. Playing big games,
jump in here real quick before you finish your thought. Yeah. I think that last primetime game, we gotta go back to Auburn. I think was the last like meaningful time.
I actually think it was Baylor, because I remember that year Baylor was ranked 6th and K-State was 9th, and it was the last Big 12 game of the season, because it was the first year of the college football playoff. This is the only reason I remember it. It was the first year of the college football playoff. Baylor needed to beat K-State, right, to have a chance to get into the college football playoff. And Baylor and TCU were, like, jockeying to try to get that spot. And neither one ended up getting it. Ohio State ended up
getting that four spot.
Yeah, but the last game of the year for Baylor was K-State. And K-State was only 3 spots behind Baylor. K-State was 9th. Baylor was 6th.
So it was a night game.
And it was College Game Day. It was College Game Day. I remember them down there. Because Lee Corso picked K-State, and I remember thinking, what are you doing? Like, there's no way Baylor's going to lose this game. Like, they're going to lose this game. There's no way. But I remember picking K-State. But that's College Game Day. That's why I remember that, was because of all the circumstances that were going on. And if K-State won, we were on Wildcat World of Sports, Bill Gurney and I, the week before, talking about how K-State had an outside shot at getting in the College Football Playoff if they beat Baylor. Because if Wisconsin was able to beat Ohio State and Baylor lost and TCU lost, then K-State had potential to get in. Now, obviously, it didn't happen, but I remember having that discussion with them. And we also had Blake Slaughter on the show, former K-State linebacker.
Oh, and I remember that. He coined the term.
Yeah, remember Blake Slaughter. He coined the term on our show. He said, because he was part of the team in 2012 that went down to Baylor that lost when they were undefeated, ranked number one in the country. He said it's wacky in Waco. I think he called it wacky in Waco, or maybe weary in Waco. That's what it was. He said it's just weary in Waco. And you get to Waco, it's just weary, man. There's something about it that's just weary. And you can feel it. You can't put your finger on it, but you can feel it. He said, we went there in 2012, and you just could feel it. You could feel it in the air. You're just like, I don't know. This is weary. And he said, you know, that there's something about Waco. And, well, clearly there is, because K-State can't win there. I mean, they can't. In football.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast Weekly with Eddie Greer and Alex Aiden.
Yeah, they cannot win. K-State cannot win. It still has a one down there. So things have not changed. At least there's a consistency there when it comes to.
But it was a good game. And Tyler Lockett went insane. He had like 200 yards receiving.
Yep, and still lost. So.
And they still lost, yeah.
Yep, so Gene Taylor, the athletic director here, I want to put this in here real quick. Made a quote when announcement went official from the athletic director, Gene Taylor. Quote, this is a tremendous group of players and young men. And he goes on to say, quote, I would like to thank Coach Steiner and Coach Kleiman for their involvement in the selection of these new inductees, but more importantly, each individual for all they have done for K-State football, our athletic program, and our university. It will be a memorable weekend to celebrate their accomplishments, end quote. And to kind of confirm the theory of the Lockets here, before Tyler Lockett got inducted into the Ring of Honor here, the list includes Lynn Dickey, Steve Grogan, Jamie Mendez, Sean Snyder, Gary Spinini, Verrill Schweitzer, David Allen, Martin Grammatica, Terrence Newman, Mark Simonone, Michael Bishop, Jordy Nelson, Clarence Scott, and Darren Sproles. So yeah, that kind of confirms it.
It's not a very big Ring of Honor.
No, it's not. Yeah, I thought there would be more than that. Apparently,
yeah.
Not.
No, honestly, Eddie, that was the first thing I took away was, wow, they're putting six people in it. Like, it's not a big Ring of Honor. Like, I thought they put like six. I couldn't believe that they were putting that many in. That was legit my first takeaway.
Yeah, and that's not that many in this class either. With the success of this K-State football the success of the last couple of years, but going to the first era of the Bill Snyder era, right? He had all the success, right? I'm kind of surprised overall about how small this class, well, not this current class, but the entire Ring of Honor is. Very surprising. But anyways.
It's crazy there's not a Lockett in it. That's insane.
Yeah.
I cannot believe it.
Yeah.
I literally cannot believe that.
Yeah, mind blown. Take away from this episode 100, folks, K-State Nation, mind blown. No Lockett was in his Ring of Honor before Tyler Lockett got nominated in here yesterday. So that's at least, finally, we can answer that question at least. Tyler Lockett will represent the Lockett family in the Ring of Honor here coming up there as well. So there's that as well here in... Kind of a sneaky peek. Speaking of trying to find primetime games here, I'm going to play a little something here. I don't want to go too deep because obviously we're going to have our predictions on the football schedule later on. But obviously, looking at this, September 3rd, start of the season, South Dakota. And then you have the week after that, you have Missouri, September 10th. And then you have Tulane on the 17th. That's three straight home games. Then you have your first road game, no shocker, on the road. Guess what team we've been talking about tonight? Wild guess. OU. Yep, that's the first.
Of course. They always start on the road, and it's usually against a team like OU.
They never start at home. It never fails. Why do we start on the road?
I have no idea.
At least we got to switch it up. I don't know. I don't make the schedule. I just read it.
And why is it always an Oklahoma school?
Yeah, we started against, was it Oklahoma State last year?
Oklahoma State last year, and it was Oklahoma the year before.
Yep. So it's
It was Oklahoma in 2012, which we were just reminiscing on.
Yeah. I don't know. Something about the water in Oklahoma. I don't know.
Clearly.
But, the first conference home game will be against Texas Tech October 1st. And then week after that, you got to go back on the road against Iowa State. And then again, you got to go stay on the road after bye week and go to Fort Worth and take on TCU. And then homecoming October 29th against Oklahoma State. Damn it. And then you have Texas on Harley Day, November 5th. And then you got to go, speaking of Baylor, oh gosh, guess what? Got to go back on the road, go right back to Waco and play Baylor. That's a loss.
Weary in Waco, especially in November.
Early hot take on the Purple Project Podcast, episode 100. West Virginia, got to go to Neil Brown, West Virginia on the road there. Yep. And then you end the year. Usually we play KU in the middle of the year, not this upcoming fall. We got them in November 26th, final game of the regular season for K-State this year. So kind of in all of that here, speaking of prime times games here, if there were, now obviously these times haven't been announced yet, and I'm pretty sure as we get into the summer months, times of these football games, or at least the first three, will be announced. Usually the first game would be around the 6 o'clock. So I would say that. But I would take a wild guess. If there were the prime time games that you want, obviously Oklahoma State was one last year on the road in Stillwater. Baylor was a prime time game last year at home. We lost that game. Iowa State at home last year, prime time game. Guess what? We lost that game. So we got a trend going on here. So in your mind, speaking of wanting more prompt being that spotlight, K-State's trying to get back to that that spot where you want to be playing part of that big primetime game. I'm pretty sure there's going to be a couple, but take your shots at what games you want to be in primetime or in that primetime slot.
Good question, Eddie. One that I would like that I don't think will get it is the Mizzou game, obviously, because that game, as I've mentioned before, Eddie, you know, that's a game that, you know, they're not just a former Big 12 school. They're a school that I really kind of associate as with K-State as a rival, kind of like Nebraska, you know. Mizzou is not like Texas A&M, right, when they left the conference. There's some hate. Like, there is some hate there. Like, there is legit some hate. And in my mind, it was never technically a rivalry, but it always felt like a rivalry to me. And maybe it was because I'm from Kansas City, and because there's a lot of Mizzou fans in Kansas City, and because I legit do not like Mizzou. And I don't think many K-State fans in Kansas City do like Mizzou. But I think that's going to be I'm just really excited for them to be playing Mizzou, that they were able to get something on the schedule for them. So that would be a game I would like to see. Not expecting it though. I view that Eddie as an 11 a.m. FS1 game. That's what I see in the K-State MU. That is what I see with that game, unless there's already a time and it's already been put out.
I agree with you there. I want that to be a prime time game, but yeah, I can definitely see that being 11 o'clock.
Here's what I see, though. I'll tell you what I see. I see Iowa State in Ames. I see that as a prime time, potential prime time game under the lights. Farmageddon, K-State, Iowa State, aside from that 45-0 blitz that K-State got in Ames 2 years ago. Aside from that, K-State and Iowa State typically play really good, really close games. And Farmageddon is something that's really picked up steam. People know what it is. That's a legit rivalry. And K-State should be really good this year. So I think that's a game that's got potential. And you mentioned the game down in OU. That's a game that I could see possibly getting that big noon, possibly that big noon kickoff.
Right? I can see it.
Talking about with Justin, with Gus and Joel, I could see that.
I can see it.
Don't know if they will. Who knows what the schedule looks like that week? There may be a bigger game. I could see that though in that OU K State game in that slot. The Baylor game. I view Baylor on the road. Again, I feel like Baylor is going to be a good team. I feel like K State is going to be a good team. That game's going to be later in the year. There's probably going to be a decent amount on the line. And so I could see that game potentially getting pegged in primetime. Kind of what happened this year, Eddie, because K-State was really hot
when Baylor
came to Manhattan. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot on the line in that K-State-Baylor game. And that game ended up getting in primetime in Manhattan. So I could kind of see it falling like that, too. So if I had to put my money on it, I would put my money on primetime night games, Baylor and Iowa State, which is exactly what we saw this last year. And with Oklahoma having that opportunity to be that big noon kickoff game, I think Texas has potential for that. But again, I don't know. I don't view that game as one that will fall in prime time in Manhattan. But maybe it is. Maybe it is. So, but Iowa State, that's probably the one. Being able to play under the lights against Iowa State, being able to beat them under the lights and up their names, that would be very, very satisfying.
That would definitely be satisfying if we could pull that off. Baylor, that's interesting. There, that's been a primetime game every time we've gone down there.
Yeah, it does feel like it. Yeah.
I can definitely see that one there. Let's see, West Virginia. I might throw. I know it's the back end of the year. KKK is going to be a day game. I can definitely see that being in a 11 o'clock game. This West Virginia, I can also see it being a 3:30 or even a primetime game. Because,
I think the games in the back half of the schedule may have more opportunity for it. Because if K-State does end up being good, like I think that they will be, I say that cautiously, but I think that they will be good and potentially contending.
Cautiously optimistic.
To play Arlington football in Arlington. If that is the case, then they would have a better chance of getting primetime games in that back half of the schedule because those games would just carry more weight at that point.
I agree with that. I definitely agree. Cautiously optimistic here on the Pro Project Podcast. If we think we know K-State should be good in football, that could definitely play its way out. So a little bit of early predictions here in the late May here on football, on the time slot slide at least anyways. But yeah, just look, obviously we'll have a lot more chatter about this football schedule coming up down the road once it gets closer to the fall season for the football team. Chris Klieman's fourth season as head coach of the Kansas State Wildcats, folks. We are closing in on the end of this podcast, folks. Let's see. That's pretty much it on my timeline here. Obviously, baseball going on right now. You got the NBA playoffs right now in the conference final stage right now. When I went down here to get everything set up, Boston was putting it on Miami in game two.
Oh, they beat the brakes off them.
Pretty much that's all I want to say for that. Right,
there's
there.
Been a ton of blowouts in this NBA playoffs. Doesn't it feel like that?
Yep, I totally agree. I totally agree, including Game 7, where Dallas just blitzed. Phoenix. Phoenix was the NBA final team last year, representing the Western Conference, and they got their butts spanked.
40 at halftime.
Yeah, and that was kind of like also Golden State in one of the series games against Memphis got beat their brakes off too by like they were trailing like 55 or something like that.
It's crazy. Insane that you're seeing so many playoff games where you turn it on and a team's winning by like 35 points. It just amazes me how many times that's happened. this year.
And I'm going to turn it off with a blowout. Yeah, so, I'm very surprised. Especially, I was really surprised that game set with Dallas and Phoenix. Very surprised.
I know, I couldn't out. Believe it. I thought not, it would be the other one.
I could not believe it. Couldn't believe it whatsoever.
Phoenix may blow them out by 40, but that might happen. I think it would be the other way around.
Yeah. Very stunned at that outcome there. Yeah, I'm Phoenix. I'm a Phoenix fan. I'm like, what the heck has just happened there? I'll be definitely
John Neumeyer's Phoenix fan. He's not happy. He's not happy at all.
Wait. Who's a Phoenix fan?
John Zettmeyer, who was also part of Wildcat 909, also yep. wore for the Collegiate, if you remember John.
Yep. Yes, I do. Yep. So went to the finals 1 year and get blown out in the conference semis the next. And you're the number one seed, so you won 64.
After talking all that trash about, I shouldn't say talking trash, disrespecting Devin Booker over there and Chris Paul disrespecting Luka throughout that series, and then Luka just do that on him.
Yeah, wow. Luka just put it on him. Yeah, that's for sure. He's hot right now.
He's on fire.
Yeah, he's on fire, and he's only 23? Damn. So he's only been a week for a while now. So, man, he ain't been in the league that long. So,
Eddie, I'm going to ask you this, too, and I know this is a deep deviating, but there's a trade. Obviously, there's a trade, right? The Trey-Luka thing with Atlanta and Dallas. Do you feel like that was a win-win, or do you wish that didn't happen for the Hawks? Because they're both superstars, right?
Yeah, they're both superstars. It's caution over it's over the win at this point. I'm happy with that. With what we got. I mean, Trey Young has been a superstar. Obviously, John, this year, I mean, we went to the conference finals last year. Tasted a little bit this year. We had up and down year when it was a lot of expectations for this team, Hawks team this year, and yep. just didn't really meet him. Had up down years, and in the second half, dealt with injuries. John Collins wasn't able to stay healthy. Trae Young needs one or two more pieces around him. If the Hawks want to go where they want to go, he's going to need at least another scorer, or even maybe. Possible two more contributors who can contribute day in, day out. They need somebody that can body up with the other opponents out there. They need somebody that's going to have that physical presence. I think they're missing just that. If they can get it, the Hawks will be right back up there. But for sure, we had to get in through the play-in this year after all the expectations of, hey, we got a shot, get back to the conference finals. But, you know, I think it was just too much. I think we're missing a piece or two, and I think we'll be okay. I think both sides won. I mean, that's been floating around lately, but I'm happy with what we got, so I'm not gonna complain.
That Eddie, I've thought about that question actually for last couple of years, because both of them have blown up, right? And It's just, I'm always wondering, like, what do the Dallas fans think, you know, when I see Trey just go off? I wonder if they still are, like, happy with the trade for Luka, and then I'll see, like, Luka go off, and I'm like, I wonder if, you know, Hawks fans are still happy with Trey. And I feel like it's a win. I feel like they're both beloved in the cities that they're in. Yeah. So I think it's a win-win, too. But it's interesting. It's a very interesting NBA trade to look back on.
Yep. And we'll end it with this here. Obviously, baseball, not your brightest moments for either of us right now. If you're a KC Royals fan, right now they're 14-23.
Blew a game today. They blew a three-run lead.
And you can say it's probably the same thing, even though we didn't play today. The Braves blew a big opportunity yesterday. Led three different times, including in extra innings. For whatever reason, we can't win in extra innings. We lose to Milwaukee after having them leading 4-0 through four innings, and then we let Milwaukee back in the game. And oh, by the way, that was the rematch of the National League Division Series, one of the series anyways, last year, which Atlanta took in four. Atlanta should have won that game. There's been plenty of those this year for Atlanta that we just can't close the deal on. I don't know what it is about the ghost runner on second, but ever since they made that stupid rule, we can't win. Seriously, we can't win. They say if we get in the extra innings, man, we lose. That's the way it is.
I love that rule.
I don't like it. I hate it.
It adds immediate drama and intrigue to the extra innings. It's just this whole. I don't want to see a game go 18 innings. I just don't want to see. I'm like, oh my gosh, would this game just end? Like, oh my gosh. I get it. You know, Eddie, you're right. Neither one of our teams has had the year that we've hoped for. And I know that the Braves have not done very well. The Royals have underperformed. They've underachieved. I think with the Braves, I would assume, because we saw last year with them, right? They started slow, really heated up right around trade deadline. Honestly, it wasn't right around the trade deadline when they
heated up. It wasn't around a trade deadline. We got the players. We had to pick up four different outfielders because Acuña had
a season. Soler was one of them.
Yep, Soler was one of them. He's with the Marlins now. We could get him back. There's a lot of chatter about that, at least on my Twitter feed, anyways. That's a good possibility, but we'll have to see. But Atlanta needs to string some wins together here first before we even think about that. But yeah, it's all started again around a trade deadline, hovering around 500, and then we didn't get past 500 until mid-August. So we're on pace to get we're on pace, but we gotta work it out for this year because the Mets.
It's still early.
Yeah. But the Mets, they just, Max Scherzer, he's on the DL now. They don't have the Mets. Jacob DeGrom and Max Scherzer, right? They're both on the DL. And New York's in first place with a 7-game lead for the time being.
They're
playing really well. As of May 19th of the Corners podcast, they have a 7-game lead over the Philadelphia Phillies. And we're 8 back of the Mets right now. So, yeah, they're playing some really good baseball right now. You got to give those guys credit right now where credit's due. They're winning the games that they're supposed to win and pulling, especially the one against Philadelphia where Philly led by like 7-1 or something like that, and then the Mets rolled off like eight runs in a row in the top of the ninth inning to win the game.
Just crazy.
Oh, man. That was funny. Even for me, I had to laugh at that because the Philadelphia Phillies, they had that game in the bag, right? 7-1, right? That's an automatic win. And then you can't close it out. That's got to be disappointing. And that's why.
That has got to be a painful pill to swallow.
And that's why Phillies are, for the time being, they're in second place. Atlanta is, even with the struggles, only a game back of second place. So we got the Marlins are ahead of us right now, half game up. Phillies are a full game ahead of us. So still early in the game, but yeah, Atlanta's they got to figure out a way to be the word is here, like we use for K-State baseball. They got to be more consistent.
Yep.
K-State baseball, that's the transition for them. Got to wrap things up on this big time episode. K-State baseball, I made a prediction on one of the daily podcasts. I don't think they're going to sweep West Virginia. Let's just call it what it is right now. They're on the road, and they find ways to lose games. The best they can do here, I think they're going to go 2-3. At least take the series. 2-3. I don't have West Virginia's record up on my computer right now. But
it's above 500. I can tell you that. I don't know what it is off my head either, but it is above 500 because I was looking at it late last week. And it'll be difficult.
Oh man! Another action-packed episode of the Purple Project Podcast Weekly coming to a close. Episode 100, triple digits of this Purple Project Podcast. We've hit triple digits on this K-State podcast. Alex, last final thoughts here on tonight on this podcast.
Yes, final thoughts for me. Just to finish off the baseball thing, I'm with you. Agree with K-State. They got to win at least 2 of 3. Although at this point, you know, it's probably a wrap for them. But hey, if you can go and you can go and you can win 2 of 3 there, you can go win one game in the Big 12 tournament. That puts you at 30 wins. That would be, you know, at least you'd have that. So, you know, we'll see what happens there. With the Royals, too, just a wrap on them. Yeah. Disappointing season for them, but the positive, if you're a Royals fan, is that the rookies are playing really well, and the number one prospect in baseball, Bagua Jr., is not prospect anymore, I guess, because of the majors, but he is really heating up. He is heating up, and the two-top rookies, he and MJ Melendez, they've hit five home runs the last 5 days, so they are at least get clicking and going. The Royals got some other problems they need to figure out, which is primarily getting rid of veterans so the young guys can play. That's really what they need to do. But I don't work in baseball management, so I can't tell them that. So I'll be going up to here next month in June. I'll be going up, taking an hour and a half drive up there to Orange County. To Anaheim to watch the Royals play the Angels. So I'll see Mike Trout, Otani, and then the Royals. Ironically enough, Eddie, the night I think I'm going is when it's the 20-year anniversary celebration of the Angels winning the World Series in 2002. So,
oh, man, that's been that long? Oh, two days.
It's been 20 years. It's been 20 years since they won. Yeah, 20 years. I think they're having the celebration the night of the game that I'm going to, so I guess I'll get a free World Series shirt while I go and get to see a fireworks after the game for that. But yeah, I am excited to go to the Royals and see the young guys, particularly Bobby Wood Jr., MJ Melendez, and those guys. I'd also like it if Zach Greinke pitched on a win. I would not be opposed to that. I haven't seen him pitch as a Royal in like 10 years. But anyway, and then finally with the Ring of Honor, just want to say congrats to all those guys. Well deserved. Golly, I got memories with 4 of the 6 memories that are just really just stamped into my brain. Yeah, I watched El Roberson. I remember I was at the game in the 2003 Big 12 Championship, watching them beat Oklahoma 35-7. He and Darren Sproles sliced and diced that Oklahoma defense up. Also that year, I remember him talking trash to Nebraska and then K-State going up and giving Nebraska their worst home loss. Against the Big 12 squad. El Roberson, he was fun to watch. Was he maybe the most talented quarterback to play K-State? Maybe not, because there's been a lot of really good quarterbacks, but he was fun to watch, and he and Darren Sproles were a dynamic 1-2 duo. And we all know Tyler Lockett. I saw him in person 4 years, because he came in and went out same time that I did. And we already talked about Arthur Brown. We know about Colin Klein. Those guys are amazing, tremendous. So, and then Larry Brown, Darren Howard, congrats to them as well for getting in. Darren Howard was part of that Lynch mob, right? That defense, that iconic defense. There, yep. 96 or 99, yeah. He was there in that 1998 defense that K-State had, the team that almost went to the national championship. John Kurtz calls it the best team to not win a national championship. So they were really good. They had amazing defense. He was part of that group. But congrats to them. Excited to see them go up in that Ring of Honor and to see them celebrate it this upcoming season. And congrats to us, Eddie, for hitting 100. Yep. Congrats to you for the work you put into this podcast and being able to get it up off the ground and first turn into what it's turned into. It's been super cool. So to be able to hit that iconic number is really a tribute to everything you've done with this podcast. And let's see if there's 100 more in there, Eddie.
Yeah, let's see if we can get 100 more in here. That's for sure. That's going to start next week. We'll come back.
We'll have episode 202 years from tonight.
We'll see. We'll see. I'll start next week for sure with episode 101. We'll come back and at this
that
time.
Sounds weird. Episode 101. That sounds weird. That sounds weird to me. That's like the best to get used to.
Yeah, that's what we'll get used to, yeah. Oh, yeah, next week we will have an update. K-State, obviously, the baseball team, will, despite their losing record, will be going taking place in the Phillips 66 Big 12 tournament there. It'll be Thursday, so we'll know by the time this podcast records where they stand. We'll see what happens there, along with if we get any more recruiting news. And also, and by the way, I've been putting guests in here as well, so we'll see how that all folds as we approach June as well. So definitely we'll have a mixture of those in there as well. The baseball team for sure, and possibly some track and field news updates, but definitely for sure, keep it locked. Make sure you subscribe to this podcast. Definitely, yes, one-on-one, that definitely sounds weird. But anyways, we're going to keep on rolling. We'll see what we got more in the tank. Very excited to see where this podcast goes, and hopefully, come fall football schedule, we'll be talking about top 25 matchups on this podcast. That's been something that we've been missing.
There's literally nothing I would like more than to be able to break down a top 25 game or a top 20 game with K-State and other teams in football.
That has not happened. That has not happened on this podcast yet.
That's insane. And that's
on basketball. For probably the exception of maybe the women's game.
That is so sad.
That is, yeah.
That is so sad. That has to change in the next 100 episodes. If we still don't get a top 20 matchup with one of those two teams, oh my God.
Yeah, that has to happen. That has to happen sometime. Hopefully it'll happen this fall with the football team first. So hopefully we can check that off the list first. But that is
cautiously optimistic.
Yes, cautiously optimistic about that. With that, episode 100 is in the books of the Purple Project Podcast Weekly Edition. Eddie Greer, Alex Aiden, make sure you subscribe to this podcast. If you're new, welcome on board. If you've been following us for a while, thank you for your support for following this podcast. Make sure you add this podcast to your encyclopedia of K-State podcast. With that, Alex, we will do this again next week.
I look forward to it, man.
For listening to the Purple Project Podcast. Make sure you're subscribed to the show wherever you get your podcasts. We'll talk to you all on the next episode of the Triple P Podcast. Go Cats!